Hello and welcome to the June 2009 edition of Hot Type Security Books and Audio, brought to you by CertSecurity.com and Addison Wesley. I'm Billy Hurley. As always, our Hot Type podcasts bring you free excerpts from recently published information security books, read by the authors themselves. Today's featured author is Ketron Evans. Ketron Evans is President and Chief Security Consultant of Blink Digital Security and winner of EC Council's Instructor of Excellence Award. Ketron is also one of the authors of our featured book, Chained Exploits, Advanced Hacking Attacks from Start to Finish, which is a guide on how to perform and prevent today's hard-to-defend chain attacks. Ketron, welcome.
Thank you.
Ketron, before we begin, let's set the stage a bit. In your book, you bring up a number of advanced attacks that hackers are performing. Which ones should an enterprise environment be most concerned with?
Well, for the most part, you know, the thing that's happening these days is there's a lot of client-side focus. So a lot of the attacks are based off of, you know, tricking end users into clicking on things, sending end users to web pages and things of that nature. So a lot of the attacks, they are starting to focus back again on the client side, which is the end user side. So, you know, hardening the perimeter is great, but if we can't, you know, educate our end users and let them see how these attacks happen, we're kind of, you know, reopening ourselves back up to some of the tricks.
I actually had another question, too. Many of these attacks that you mentioned in the book seem to require a lot of steps and sometimes even a bit of luck, too, with attackers maybe coming across key information in Google. Are these attacks theoretical, or have you seen some of these firsthand?
No, we've seen most of these attacks in the book firsthand, and, you know, ironically, a lot of the attacks that we see, we took them directly from a pen test that we've actually, you know, been involved with. The thing about it is finding information on Google is rarely a chance now. I mean, there is an art to it, and, you know, it's lots of information gets leaked out onto the Internet. A lot of it's intentional. Some of it's unintentional. I think one thing that's important for people to remember is once you put something on the Internet, there's really no way to ever get it off. When you put it out there, it's pretty much out there permanently.
So if the end user is often the problem, what should a security staff do to make sure that their employees get the message?
Yeah, well, we've had a pretty good success with some of our clients. Instead of taking the traditional route of having them log onto a website and answer, you know, read a few paragraphs or read a few pages and then take a test on it, we'll go in for 2 hours or so and basically, you know, walk them through checking their email, let them check their email. We'll send them an email that's got maybe a Trojan or something attached to it that we've masked and hidden, or send them to a website that's going to infect them with something, and let them go through that entire scenario, basically mimicking their day-to-day activities, and let them get infected with something that we've put out there, and then we go back and show them, because you went to this web page, or because you clicked on this email attachment, or because you opened this email, look at what I can do. I can browse your C drive from the Internet. I can pull files down. I can put more files in your machine, or I can use your machine to hack into another machine. So we found it to be a lot more effective to go in and do something like that, and then talk to them about why they shouldn't open unknown attachments, why they shouldn't open emails from unknown people. It's a lot more effective if you can put them front and center and let them actually somewhat experience these bad things happening as a result of them visiting these sites and doing things like that. I think it's a lot more effective to go about it in that approach.
Sure, sure. And in most cases, employees are falling for these tricks?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, right after there's been awareness training, you have maybe a little bit less level of success, but, you know, 2 months later, 3 months later, they've forgotten about it, and you go back and try the same attacks, and you have a much higher percentage of success just because, you know, they've forgotten about it. It's old news. They don't think about it anymore. So, yeah, very prone to some of these attacks, and a lot of the social engineering attacks these days are not the traditional call up and see if you can get them to tell you their password over the phone. I mean, we do much more complex things, such as, you know, send out actually paper mail, snail mail that says, you know, you're being audited by the IRS. You need to visit this website to see the status of it, and send them to a website that infects them with something. There's also the idea of just taking random thumb drives that have Trojans on them and just planting those or dropping them around a company's location and watch the employees go pick them up and go plug them in, because they want to see what's on there, or maybe they just found a free thumb drive. So there, it's the attacks like that are much more complex now than what we've traditionally seen.
You mentioned in Chapter 5 of your book, you talk about attacks that originate through one company and end in the compromise of another, of a peripheral company. Can you walk us through the basics of that kind of attack?
So basically in Chapter 5, the character Phoenix, who's basically the character throughout the entire book, is a guy that, you know, is by day he's a network administrator for a medium-sized company, but by night he's a malicious hacker. So and he's kind of what you consider a gray hat. He's a good guy in the daytime and a bad guy at night. And he's actually hired to penetrate this defense contractor and get some classified information out of that corporation. And after some time of trying to penetrate this defense contractor, he finds that it's going to be very difficult and he's going to run out of time. So what he does is he recons or performs reconnaissance against this company and finds out that they subcontract out a part of their business to a smaller company. So he goes after that company and recons them and finds out that they subcontract a part of their business out to an even smaller company. So what he does is he goes the third company out, penetrates that company, embeds a Trojan and a rootkit, which is basically a masked malicious file or malicious application inside one of their key applications that they sell to the second company out. So when they pushed their product through to the second company, that company just took it and wrapped it in their own product, which they sold to then the defense contractor. So basically, even though the security was high and the defense contractor had very good security, it was through a third-party contractor that didn't have that great a security posture that he was able to actually get through, and then through that connection able to piggyback into the defense contractor.
Keetran, to go over those countermeasures, why don't we have you read from Chapter 5 of your book? Folks, this is Chapter 5 called Chained Corporations. It's from the book Chained Exploits, Advanced Hacking Attacks from Start to Finish.
Okay, countermeasures. Countermeasures for hackers passively finding information about your company. How important is it for the world to know who your company partners with or who it subcontracts out to? Better yet, does the world even need to know this information? What partner companies do you think link to your corporate websites? If I would follow these links to these companies, what information do they freely give up about you on their websites? What do their security policies say about working with partner companies? Are the companies you subcontract or partner with as serious and paranoid about security as you are? How many of your security policies can you turn into requirements for other companies to do business with you? It's very commonplace for attacks to originate from trusted third parties. You must make sure your partner companies understand your security stance and respect it, particularly concerning disclosure and release of information. Countermeasures for social engineering attacks on Visual IQ. The tech Bill Hines at Visual IQ is willing to give up way too much information. The term security awareness comes to mind. Bill basically gave up all the goods to Phoenix, the attacker, and told him information that should be reserved for paying clients only. Oh, we get updates to clients via FTP, and we make sure they get the right version by sending them an MD5 checksum via email. It's way too much information to disclose to someone who just calls up and asks for it. Countermeasures for recon on Visual IQ software. Quite simply, there should be protection mechanisms built into the software to prevent it from being so easily viewed. In other words, one should see obscured code instead of plain-as-day code. That can easily be deciphered. There are so many solutions available for this, and they are not very expensive at all these days. And there are even some open-source free versions as well. One-word encryption. Countermeasures for a Wi-Fi attack on the Quizzy Home Network. Seems like all papers and books written on wireless security these days always start with one piece of advice: don't use WEP. Although this advice has become almost cliche, WEP is still heavily in use. Several reasons contribute to this, including hardware and software that support only WEP. For example, Windows XP without Service Pack 2, or the WPA hotfix applied. The truth of the matter is that even if using WPA, a passphrase less than 14 characters makes cracking WPA almost as trivial as cracking WEP. But it should be understood that the process of cracking WPA is not as documented as cracking WEP. Just do a Google search for cracking WEP video and do the same for cracking WPA video and notice the difference. the attack where Phoenix simply used a default vendor username and password to manage the wireless device configuration is more commonplace than the reader might imagine. I've been involved in several penetration tests where many devices, including firewalls and routers and other critical equipment, were configured with default credentials or credentials very close to default credentials. The bottom line is, don't leave any equipment set to the default. Imagine if every key for every Ford Explorer on the planet were the same. Anybody with the Ford Explorer key could open the door and drive off in anybody else's Ford Explorer. It is my belief that every wireless access point should come with a unique default admin username and password. Countermeasures for the keylogger attack. The key here is keeping antivirus software up to date and, if possible, running some type of host-based intrusion detection system. The bigger problem here is the rootkit Phoenix installed on the Quizzy laptop he infected, which is running 2003 server. Rootkits can be impossible to detect. Hacker Defender has been around for a long time, but it's important to note that it's highly customizable. There are several tools designed just to identify rootkits. Rootkit Revealer is one popular choice. There are several other open source and commercial tools available to do either do or claim to do the same thing. Just be careful that you don't rootkit yourself by using an open source rootkit discovering tool.
Keetron, thanks a lot.
Okay.
When you look at all these attacks in your book, is there some sort of ultimate countermeasure that can be applied to each one of these cases?
The thing is the problem is there really is no ultimate countermeasure, because the attacks can originate from so many different places, and they could have the attacks oftentimes have different end goals as well. So the countermeasure is going to vary greatly based on that. But there are some overall things that we always recommend for everybody. Obviously, end-user awareness, constantly keep your people up to date. And this could be, it doesn't have to always be formal training. Maybe do formal training a couple of times a year. But just send out updates and newsletters and things like that that they kind of read and see on a daily basis. Another thing that we always focus on is least privilege. Don't allow, whether it be an employee or a company, of yours, or a partner company of yours, to have privileges that they don't need to do whatever it is they do for you. And thirdly, one of the things that we focus on heavily, and I focused on this a lot more myself recently, is how much you trust third-party companies. Because that was a big problem in this chapter, was the trust with third-party companies. And the thing with that is, when companies talk about internal attacks, they usually focus on an employee that's on the payroll. But we always try to get people to understand, look, when you look at internal attacks, you have to include vendors that you work with, companies that you do business with, clients, anybody that has any level of access to your information for any reason should be considered an internal threat. And that's a lesson that I think companies oftentimes don't learn until after they've been compromised that way.
Do you need to kind of come to some baseline agreements, and what should those be?
Yeah, absolutely. Just for working in certain environments, there are certain basic criteria that needs to be met as far as information security. For example, if you're a company that wants to accept credit cards as a form of payment, there's something called PCI compliance.
Sure.
And as a company, you have to, meet that criteria to be able to take credit cards as a form of payment. And I think that companies that are smart would come up with some type of agreement like that to say, look, by the way, we have this company compliance that if you're going to do business with us, you got to meet this baseline of security. And it doesn't have to be extreme or over the top, but it needs to be something to at least establish a baseline to get the ball rolling in that direction. And you can even increase the posture of that. It increased the intensity of that policy, over time. But you have to do something like that to get yourself moving in that direction.
All right. Thanks very much. That was Keetron Evans, author of the book Chained Exploits, Advanced Hacking Attacks from Start to Finish, published by Addison Wesley. To learn more and to check out our other information security podcasts, make sure to visit our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. I'm Billy Hurley. Thanks for listening.